What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Cameron, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I like you've been very active. I think this Lovie Smith firing has inspired you on Twitter because you've been very active.
Yeah.
There's been more Cameron on Twitter over the last 5 days than I've seen in the last year.
Yeah,
All right,
it's
so
true.
here's how we do it. I think you state your opinion on it, and we'll just go from there. I've got a lot of thoughts on it, but you've been very vocal, so spell out what you think about this firing.
I guess I have to start off by saying I'm a little bit biased, only because Lovie took us to the Super Bowl. I respect him so much as a head coach. It wasn't until I left Chicago and went down and played for Cam Cameron, because I had Dick Geron before Lovie, and Dick's obviously a great coach, been in the NFL forever, and then Lovie. And when I went down under Cam Cameron, I realized just what a great coach Lovie was, how prepared he was, his attention to detail, his feel for kind of how his team was feeling and performing, whether to push us, whether to hold back a little bit. I think he had a great knack for that. And, I think for all of his shortcomings, developing a consistent offense, even an offense in the top 20 in the NFL, which I don't think is too much to ask, and his failed hirings of offensive coordinators, I don't think there's a better fit for the Chicago Bears as a head coach than Lovie Smith. He immediately came in and made an impact defensively, and that, lasted throughout his entire tenure. Not only defense, but special teams has been, top five, top 10 in the league since he's been in Chicago. And, these are things that win games, that win championships. And I know we failed to win the Super Bowl when we were there, and he's had struggles getting in the playoffs. But I think with the right offensive coordinator, and Phil Emery basically said, came out and said this is why, he was let go. But, with the right offensive coordinator, when Ron Turner was really doing a good job in Chicago, we were one of the best teams in the league. It's a defense hard to beat, special teams that sets the offense up with good field position and short fields and can score points. We've seen Devin Hester decline, in the last couple of years, and that's really affected the offensive output in Chicago. I think I would have liked to have seen one more year with Phil Emery and Lovie Smith together, because I think Phil Emery has a solid grasp on how to build a playoff caliber football team, the steps that need to be taken, how to evaluate the guys that you have versus the guys who are out there to help you better your football team. And I think I don't know what's going to happen with this defense, if they're going to, gut it and get rid of some guys, get rid of, Brian Urlacher and change systems, stuff like that. But I felt that this defense, this special teams group, they had, at least one more playoff championship caliber season in them, and I would have liked to have seen some improvements on the offensive line, a weapon to work inside, the numbers in the passing game, and an offensive coordinator that could fit with the way Lovie Smith likes to coach football. I would like to see one more season. I think we're going to see Chicago take a step back. There's only one team that wins the Super Bowl every year. I know there are six that go to the playoffs in each conference. But if, the knack on Lovie is, he didn't win a Super Bowl. He failed to consistently make the playoffs, missed five out of the last 6 years. Circumstances dictated that. He wasn't responsible for building the talent along the offensive line. He didn't trade Greg Olsen away. He did hire Mike Martz, which kind of led to that. And I know, that was probably his major flaw as a head coach, was a failing of hiring the right offensive coordinator. But I feel like he deserved, with everything he's done in Chicago, with his success that he's had and what he's built, the team that he has right now coming back, a 10-win season, I felt one more year with a little bit more improvement on the offensive side of the ball that we could be talking about, a championship-caliber football team.
there's a lot there. And so let's break it down piece for piece. I don't think anybody can make an argument that Lovie Smith is not arguably the best defensive head coach the organization's ever had. They're consistently top five, top six, top seven on defense. Their special teams have been great. What I have to imagine happens here, and we're seeing it now with the choices Phil Emery's making to interview, I think this decision came down to, for Phil Emery, I really do believe this, and I haven't actually written this yet, but I've been thinking about it more and more. He's got a quarterback who's 29 years old. He's got a quarterback, and we're talking about Phil Emery here, who he thinks is the franchise quarterback. And I think Phil Emery had to sit there and decide, is Lovie Smith the head coach that can compare with this quarterback and get me to a Super Bowl? And for the last two or three years, it simply hasn't looked like it. There is no excuse, even with a poor offensive line this year. And the offensive line this year was not any poorer than it was last year.
Right.
I mean, basically the same talent. There is no excuse for them to be significantly worse as an offense this year with Brandon Marshall added to the mix, with Alshon Jeffrey. And I my theory here is that Phil Emery saw that, and that's what set off the alarm for him, that he said, this group of coaches is incapable of developing an offensive structure. I agree with you. I would have gone one more year. Now, there's contract logistics there that get crazy, because then you have to give Lovie an extension to keep him off the lame duck year. But, and by the way, I think that's also playing in. I think if Lovie had 2 years left, I think he's the head coach next year.
Yeah.
On the contract. But he had 1 year left. I mean, so yeah, let's go into the defense, because I know a lot of people are speculating now that Rod's still under contract, that if they bring in an offensive coordinator head coach, they can sell him on Marinelli, they can sell him on maintaining the structure. What would be the difference for you as a player if next year, all right, let's say Bruce Arians is hired, Bruce Arians comes in, takes over the offense, he's cool with Marinelli. You go into camp next year, Ron Marinelli's your defensive coordinator. Will that be a drastically different defensive approach next year without Lovie?
Well, I think if that happens, if they bring in an offensive head coach and they retain Rod Marinelli, they retain that defensive staff, then you're going to see the exact same, you know, defense, the cover two, you know, pressuring the quarterback, front four, you know, getting upfield pressure. You're going to see the exact same defense on the field. Where I think we'll see, and I never had the opportunity to play under Rod Marinelli. I, you know, knew about him in Tampa Bay. I knew that they, you know, he was a great defensive line coach. Played against him when he was in Detroit, unfortunately, for him during that tenure. You know, so I don't know exactly how he coaches. What I know is that Lovie's very underrated when it comes to preparing a game plan for an opponent. And there's not a lot of game plan schematic changes when you play Lovie's system. You play what you play, you force an offense to beat you. Where he has grown over the years and really developed that system, he's kind of turned it into more, not just a base cover two, but they do a lot more out of it. They run different zone pressures, they drop more guys into coverage, they bring pressures from different areas, things that work against what an opponent does. And I think that's where Lovie's very underrated. And Rod Marinelli has done a great job as defensive coordinator. We've seen this defense really play better now when he got that defensive coordinator title. But make no mistake that Lovie is directly, daily involved with preparation, with game planning, with breaking down an opponent, as involved as any defensive head coach that I've been around. And those are things that maybe his in-game management problems that he's had as far as, you know, challenges or timeouts or, clock issues. The one thing he was very good at was creating a game plan for an opponent, and if in-game changes were needed, they were made pretty quickly.
Who on this defense right now do you look at and say, I mean, Henry Melton sort of jumps out to me, but who do you look at on this defense and say, if they make a drastic system switch, this guy will be greatly affected. This guy cannot – he's not going to translate to any system you want to run. Are there players on this defense that you'd say, oh, I don't know if there's a role for him if they go 3-4, if they go to a more attacking style?
Yeah, I don't know if Julius Peppers can fit in a 3-4. I mean, he's one of the most athletic defensive linemen probably in the history of the NFL. But he's played with his hand in the dirt, and he's been very effective doing that. I think Henry Melton can play in any system. He can play a 3 technique in a 4-3. He can play a J.J. Watt 5 technique in a 3-4 and probably make more plays than he does in a 4-3. He's a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber guy in whatever system he's playing, and he's going to make plays. Really it kind of comes down to if you're going to move to a 3-4 system, which, obviously it's tough to change 3-4 to 4-3 or vice versa. Shea McClellan is a 3-4 outside linebacker. I think he could fit that nicely. Nick Roach would have to move inside, as far as Brian Urlacher goes, who knows what's going to happen with him. But Lance Briggs can probably play inside. But now when you move outside, you're talking about corners who have been, Tim Jennings excelled in this cover two system. Charles Tillman's played in the cover two basically his entire career. Now you're asking those guys to, get at the line of scrimmage and play press man-to-man coverage 90% of the time. I don't think those two guys are really built for that. And I don't think you really have an athletic enough safety. Major Wright's made tremendous improvements, but I don't think there's a safety on the Bears roster who can come down and play a slot receiver consistently enough to be effective. Chris Conte, I think, is good in the deep half, in the deep middle, but I don't think he can come down consistently play, man-to-man or tight zone coverage, tight quarters coverage like a 3-4 system does. So that's where I think we would see, the issues back in the secondary. I think up front, the transition might be a little smoother. I think, Israel Adonijé could be a great 5 technique in a 3-4. Julius Peppers, if he played outside linebacker or if they moved him inside, they'll find a spot for him to be effective. But you're just paying him a lot of money to not really get the maximum out of him. And then you don't really have a nose guard, a 0 technique, 2-gap Vince Wilfork type player who can eat up space. But I don't, I would imagine that, Phil Emery went to Lovey and said, fire your entire offensive staff. We'll give you another year. He said, no, he's out. But I think his plan all along was to keep that defense in the 4-3 and doing what they've been doing, whether they bring another guy in to kind of change the system, but still, a 4-3 guy. I can't imagine they're going to make a drastic switch to a 3-4.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think Emery said so much in his press conference. He said the next coach will have to convince me that we should drastically sort of upend our talent. I think they'll be in a 4-3. I think they're going to try to convince Rod Marinelli to stay there and run that defense. But, and now that you mentioned it, I feel like the guy maybe I didn't think about, I don't know. See, when I think about 3-4 switches, I think about the way Houston has Danielle Manning playing in the back. And I don't see Chris Conte as that kind of guy. I think he would probably be on the outs looking in. Here's the thing that we talked about a little bit online yesterday, and then Jason McKee decided to come after me on Twitter, so I had to have a conversation with Jason for a while. The comment I made that sort of stirred people up was, Lovey has this track record. We jokingly call it the Lovey red shirt, where he brings the guy in, the guy goes mysteriously on IR a week before the season starts, and then in his second year, starts to develop, in his third year becomes a real player. He's done it so many times. He's a brilliant developer of young defensive talent. But I made the comment that I haven't seen it on the offensive side of the ball. And a question I've never actually asked anybody or had an answer. You've been there. You've been in there in the locker room. What's Lovey's relationship to the offensive side of the, or what was Lovey's relationship to the offensive side of the ball? Was he more, I know he was more involved, but was he on a day-to-day basis much more involved with the defensive players than the offensive players? Did he have a stake in the offensive player development in the way he did on defense?
Probably not. Probably just because he knew exactly what type of player fit every position in his defense. He knew the physical makeup, the size, mental capabilities. He knew exactly what player to plug into each specific spot in his system. Offensively, you know, it wasn't the same because he had offensive coordinators come and go. He didn't understand exactly what these guys did as intricately as he did his own cover two system. So, you know, there's no way that he could understand exactly how to develop an offensive player as opposed to a defensive player who, you know, fit exactly what he was looking for. So I think, you know, it's fair to say during his tenure, there were many more defensive players who developed to a higher level than on the offensive side of the ball. Henry Melton probably jumps out, a fourth rounder playing at the all-pro level. I think athletically this guy is a freak. So, like I said, he'd be great in any system. But, you know, if you kind of look down the list, Hunter Hillemeyer had a solid career. He was a fifth rounder. Chris Harris, you know, played at an all-pro level. He was a sixth rounder. Lance Briggs was drafted in the third round. He's been a perennial Pro Bowl player. All these guys, Israel Adonijé was an undrafted free agent, played at a high level. You know, there's a lot of examples on defense. And now, you know, the other side of the ball, you know, I was really racking my brain to kind of come up with some guys. I think number one, you have to say Bernard Berrien, a third round guy. We didn't get to see everything he could have done for Chicago because, you know, Minnesota grossly overpaid for him and kind of took him away when he was a free agent. But he led the NFL 2 years in a row, led the NFL in yards per reception. You know, that's playing at a pretty high level. Greg Olsen was a first rounder, but I mean, the season he just had in Carolina, you can't give the Bears all the credit for that, but I think this guy was developing into that type of player. Had Mike Martz not come in and kind of gotten rid of the tight end, you know, I think we'd be talking about Greg Olsen as one of those guys right now. I think Lance Lewis, for all the struggles he's had, a seventh round pick, who's been a consistent starter, was a consistent starter this year, as consistent as you could be, you know, on a struggling offensive line, but a guy that definitely developed into a starting caliber offensive lineman for a seventh round pick, which is not easy to do. Jason McKee was an undrafted fullback, played at a pretty high level, never went to a Pro Bowl, but a very solid starting fullback.
And Jason, if you're listening, Jason, I think you're terrific. I want you to, you can, anytime you're in New York, come to my house. I'll take you to dinner. Whatever you want, Jason, just give me a ring. You can email me. I'll give you my phone number, Jason. Fine. I apologize. It all comes down to this. And it's a very tricky firing. It's a very unique firing. And it's because it's hard to fire a guy off a 10-win season.
Yeah.
I feel like the last 3 years have been successful years. But I think when Phil Emery was hired to do this job, he had made up his mind right then and there that he was going to bring in his own head coach. A general manager is defined by their head coach hire. And This was Lovey's team. But so let's wrap this up. You give the fans here, somebody who played for him, somebody developed by him. Sum up Lovey Smith and as best you can for the Chicago Bears fan.
I think you can sum Lovey best up probably just by saying, you know, he was the ultimate preparer. Nobody, and while we were in Chicago, no team, you know, was better prepared week in and week out than we were. We understood what an opponent wanted to do, how they wanted to attack us, how exactly we were going to try to stop that. And I can speak for special teams and defense because that's where we excelled, but also, you know, where I played. That trickled down to his assistant coaches. And I think the way he ran the Bears organization, you know, on the field reflected that. He never was too high. He never was too low. It was always about, you know, what can you do today to make yourself, you know, better than you just were, have a better performance than you had, you know, yesterday. Whether you had an excellent performance or a horrible performance, you know, it was always about taking that next step, finding that one thing you can do today to make yourself better. And during a 16, you know, game, 17-week regular season, you can lose sight of those things. You can lose sight of, you know, just coming to work today to get better at something to make yourself a better player on Sunday. And, you know, he did an excellent job of always ensuring that that was your focus. When you were there to work, you were there to work. And, you know, he made sure you were focusing on the right details. And, you know, guys loved him. I loved playing for him. He wasn't a rah-rah, you know, hug, high-five kind of head coach. But you knew if you were playing for the Chicago Bears that he would, you know, go to bat for you 100 times out of 100. And nobody ever questioned that. He respected guys as, you know, men who were there to do a job for him, you know, with him, and, you know, to reach a common goal to win the Super Bowl, which we, you know, fell just short of. But, you know, the lessons that he taught me, you know, I use them every day. I try to teach my kids the same things. You know, if you say something, if you say you're going to be somewhere, then be there. If you're supposed to be here at this time, be there at that time. You know, if you're responsible to be, you know, in the deep half field, you better be there because these guys are counting on you to be there. And those are the things that he instilled in us as a football team. You know, and I think that's why it's a little tough for me to see him go. In kind of the, you know, the coaches that we see coming up, you know, the Chip Kelly type of guys, the Nick Sabans, and I'm not comparing those two or, you know, grouping them together. But, you know, Lovey was, he was old school. You know, he was there. He was going to do his job. He was going to beat you at what you were trying to do, line up and punch you in the mouth for 60 minutes, and the best man wins. He wasn't trying to trick you. He wasn't trying to, you know, pull anything other than I'm going to prepare my team better than you can prepare your team. We're going to go out there and beat you. You know, and something that I think was a perfect fit for the Chicago Bears. It's going to be hard to replace that guy with somebody else who can fit that mold. You know, Mike Ditka is the ultimate Chicago Bears coach. Lovie Smith, even though he wasn't fiery on the sideline and yelling at officials and grabbing players, you know, he had that same toughness about him, and guys knew that, and I think we played that way. Definitely a tough guy to replace, and, you know, someone who, when it's all said and done, even though he didn't win a Super Bowl in Chicago, which I know, you know, he'll always regret that game, just like I will, just like everybody who was on that team will. A guy that'll go down, you know, as one of the best coaches in Bears history.
Well, now Phil Emery's got to replace him, and this will be the definitive moment of Phil Emery's tenure. Cam, great season. Thank you for coming on. Let's talk week of the
pleasure.
Super Bowl. We'll do a little Super Bowl preview that week.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, thank you, Cam.
Yep.